curated to encourage leaders at all levels to be their best selves and to bring a fresh, curious perspective to today's issues in business and culture. Our goal is to equip listeners with the resources to always move forward.
Welcome to the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. I am Carla Soans, and I am here today with Ron Kitchens. How are you doing today, Ron?
Good. You didn't flinch when you said Soans.
It's rolling off my tongue much more easy these days than it was for a while there. I was starting to, you know, the W was starting to creep in, and now it's rolling off a lot easier.
For those of you who missed it, Carla is a newlywed, and you know, as a man, I have never had to change my name and can't imagine that.
It's a lot more work than what you realize it is.
Just the documents and all of that and, you know, repositioning your brain.
Yes. To say it correctly, to write it correctly, and then just all the work to have all your documents, your bills, everybody in your life calling you different things. I have to say, my best friend, when she got married, it took me 6 years to change her name in my phone. And I still, when I type her name, I want the wrong name to come out. It takes a long time to rewire that, but I'm getting there. I think I'm going to have less Winchesters and more Soans in the future.
That is funny. As you were saying that, I realized that when I sign my name, and I sign my name thousands of times a year, you know, I'm Ron Kitchens, but I grew up Ronnie Ray. And so my brain, when I write it, thinks Ronnie Ray Kitchens. And is that like the same thing for women on the last name that you never really get past your maiden name or a longtime married name? Or
you do eventually, but I don't know. It's kind of like when you start a new year and you write the wrong date so many times. And then occasionally when life gets really busy and you're just not thinking, you all of a sudden start going back to the wrong year. And you're like, why am I doing that? I think it's more like that where you start doing it, but then you have these like slip up moments where all of a sudden you're the wrong name again.
Yeah.
So, but the good news is that it's coming along easier. There's a lot of changes when you get married. And so we've been in kind of this whirlwind of 2018 has been for us this season of just a lot of change to manage, but it's really exciting change and it's super fun and couldn't be happier. So Soans it is.
So, well, and you know, we're talking about high performance teams today, and that's about change.
Yes, it is.
You know, and so let's jump into that.
Yeah. So let's talk about it. So we kind of got off track there this morning, but high performance teams, we're going to be talking a little bit with Ron today on this concept of really building a high performance team and a high performance organization. And we're in a world today where it's kind of perform or perish, and teams are being asked to be more productive, to be able to showcase more of their results. We're in a world where everything is a little bit more transparent now with the internet, and fundraisers know that they need to be able to show exactly where those dollars went and what they're for and what the outcomes are. And this concept of high performance teams is becoming more and more relevant, but there still is kind of some curtains behind it where people are not really sure what it means to build a high performance team and how to showcase your efforts in doing this. So I want to turn it over to you, Ron, to just really talk about how you have established the culture at Southwest Michigan First and how it feels to have built a culture that really focuses on that high performance team, and how you, with great intention, have hired team members and onboarded them in a way that you can truly declare that it's a high performance team.
Yeah. And that's, you know, this idea of high performance teams. And I know, I think in the second half of, or part two of this podcast, we're going to actually go deep on how you measure high performance teams and those things. So we'll kind of kick off with the nuts and bolts, and then we'll talk about the measurement next week. But you said produce or perish. You know, I've been thinking a lot about that. And I think it's really disrupt or perish is a better model, that change is a form of disruption, or disruption is a form of change. And so what that means is, you know, if you use a car as an analogy, if your car is tuned up, if it's full of gas, if oil's changed, if the windshield wipers are new and working well, everything about it is at peak performance, you can drive that car pretty much anywhere there's a road. And you have a choice. If the road gets blocked, you can go off road. click it into four-wheel drive and you go off-road. You can change your strategies. The GPS can get reset. High-performance teams enable you to disrupt and adapt at a much faster pace. They're built for that, but they also will produce in whatever environment they're in. You know, if we're using a sailing metaphor, whichever the way the wind blows, they're going to produce and they're going to adjust their sails and they're going to get to the ultimate goal. And if there's no wind, they're going to catch, which is the, and I've spoken on that. I think we've even talked about it on the podcast where, you know, kedging is an old sailor's trick that when you're becalmed and there's no wind, you've still got to keep moving the boat. You can't just sit there and vacillate. So you take all the line on the boat, you tie it all together, you tie it to a heavy anchor, you row out in a smaller boat, you drop it in, and then all hands on deck, this is where the term comes from, you know, grabs the rope and pulls the boat to the anchor. And you just keep doing that over and over. That's what high performance teams will do. They find a way to win regardless of what the environment is.
So in order to build this kind of culture or this team that's quote unquote high performance, what do you do right off the get-go in order to make sure that you've got the right people on the bus, so to speak?
That's critical. You know, as Jim Collins said, you got to have the right people on the bus. That's what successful organizations do. You know, for us, we start out with defining what we're trying to achieve. So we don't believe in job descriptions at Southwest Michigan First. I think job descriptions get used as an excuse to not do something. Hey, it's not my job. Or they become limiting factors on, well, I can only do this because this is what my description is. High performance people don't want limits put on their execution and their leadership. So we don't do those. But we do talk about what are the traits that we're looking for in a person's leadership and what are the skills that they need to have to join our team. So once we do that, we put the word out into the sphere and resumes begin to come out. We advertise in all the traditional places online. But what we discover is everyone on our team had a connection 2 or 3 degrees at the max separate from the organization to the organization. So we're really recruiting in our own sphere of influence, even if it's somebody coming from outside of state. We then define who are the best candidates based on their resumes. We then send those candidates through a screening tool that we use that's looking at the intensity of their talents. It's not just enough to know somebody's talented. I need to know how intense they are. And so the instrument we use, everyone on our team scores in the top 15% of intensity of the millions of people who have ever taken this tool. So once we know that, we then run them through the Gallup's screening. So we want to make sure their strengths align with our needs because we don't want to hire somebody who's a strengths are around being a librarian. If we need somebody who's needs to be an intense sales rep, it's just different. Then the person's good or bad. We just make sure, you know, you've got the right kind of horse that you're riding. If you need a horse to win the Kentucky Derby, then you don't put a Clydesdale in the race. And so we have to make sure we're selecting the right horse. We then at that point try to get down to 3 candidates, one of which needs to be a diversity candidate. And diversity, we're pretty broad on how we define that, but we have to make sure we're being conscious of that. Then those 3 candidates will interview with a small group that represents kind of every level of the organization in terms of time served, old kids, medium kids, and new kids, so that we're making sure that we're developing our newest hires so they understand the process and they own it. And we're saying, does this person have what it takes to work on our team? And they're doing a lot of vetting in that process. Once they pass that through, and if we've done our job well, that's 2 or 3 people, they then interview with everybody on the team. And their team members are interviewing for fit and saying, do I want to spend half of my waking hours with this person? And if we do all of that right and we honor our system, we never have a bad hire. It just doesn't happen.
So having the right people on the bus, it sounds like you spent a lot of time really going through multiple layers of the organization and multiple different assessment and screening tools and interventions in order to make sure that you're making good hires. I know that there's at times people view this as like being a little clicky. And how do you know that the team is doing a really good job in that fit process? What could you shine some light on to other leaders who are thinking, well, if everybody gets to decide whether they would want to work with that person, do you end up having all people who are basically the same? And how do you ensure that you have a diverse team with multiple skill sets as you go through that process?
So we end up with a very diverse team. If we do the analysis correctly on the front end and we define what we're looking for, and everybody on the team knows exactly what we're looking for, and they're reviewing that as we go through the process. If we use the talent instruments correctly, because all we're doing in there is we're blindly measuring intensity. We've not met the person. They don't know if they're blonde, red-haired, blue, you know, or black hair. We don't know, you know, in a lot of cases, if it's a man or a woman, just not in that screening.
Or age. You don't know age.
It's intensity. We don't know if you went to the best college or you were last in your class and, you know, had to take 3 courses of bowling to get graduated. Doesn't know that. It's just who has the intensity. Then as we review credentials, then that's where we can coalesce around amazing. But, you know, the people on the team, when they do the fit interview, everybody has a vote. And the interesting thing, if they say yes, they send a note that says functionally, yes, I think this person would be a great fit for our team. And I understand that their success or failure is a direct reflection on my leadership. So that's never any of this back channel comments of I didn't really want that person anyway. No. You told us yes, and this is what you said. And so you don't have that gossipy back channel that a lot of places get of what they hire that person for. Everybody knows that the person who got hired is hiring one more like your best, one more like or better than your best. But if you say no, you have to have a discussion on why no. And invariably, it boils down to the person treated a server at a restaurant or a coffee shop badly. They gossiped about previous employer or somebody they knew, we've never had it happen with a woman candidate. We've had it happen with men. They were creepers and they were inappropriate with women, in particular younger women or women who they thought were subordinate to them. It happened one time and we don't tell anybody who they would work for, who would be their leader. We interviewed the candidate was strong, but treated a woman who actually would have been his boss really dismissively. I mean, almost patting her on the hand and saying, sweetie, when I get here, I'll teach you how the world is. And we don't want those people on team. And by having lots of faces interacting with them, that stuff kind of boils out. You know, and I admit, I hate firing people. I hate it. There's nothing worse. And, you know, every leader I ever met felt that way. So we don't have to do that because we invest on the front end and we don't lose all that productivity. We don't lose our culture because of that. You know, and if this system doesn't work, every time it doesn't work is because we didn't operate the system correctly. We shortcutted it because we got in a hurry.
And that's an incredible opportunity that the individuals on the team have to be a part of that process of onboarding individuals to the team, especially when you're working on a team that's so high functioning and so high performing. You really need to be able to run together well. And saying you get to help decide who that is extremely powerful for team members at all levels. But one of the things that we kind of jumped into getting the right people on the bus, and you alluded to the fact that you need to know where the bus is actually going. And so I want to go back there and just talk about really having an established culture, because in order for the team members to make good decisions and to be able to provide valuable insight into those hires, they need to understand the culture of the organization. They need to understand what the individual is going to be working towards. What goals are they going to be helping the team to move forward? And part of that is really having a high performance culture in place before you start onboarding more and more people into the organization. So I'm going to take you back back there, Ron, and really talk about how at Southwest Michigan First have you established that culture, and what are some of the ways that you maintain and keep advancing that culture? And more importantly, how do you keep the employees or the team members abreast of that culture and those cultural changes, and why that culture has been set and is so vital to the organization?
So I think clarity and openness is critical to that. So every member of our team begins the year with an individualized performance plan. That plan is, we have corporate goals that we need to achieve on a given year. Those goals are then drilled down into the individual teams that are working to achieve those goals, which are then drilled down to the individual performance. What are you going to do that ultimately feeds to the goal of the organization? So people understand that. We meet every 40 days on one-on-ones with people, making sure they're moving towards those goals. As a team, every 2 weeks, we're reviewing our team goals as an entire team and talking about our scoreboard, which kind of sort of reflects or looks like Wrigley Field's scoreboard, where we're talking about what we need to do on multiple fronts where we can combine and collaborate for success. And so if you hire amazing people, you tell them what the ultimate goals are for them to achieve, and then you give them the freedom to operate, what you find is they will surprise you how amazing they are. Now, occasionally we'll get somebody who reaches a point in their life that they'll say, you know what, I either want to go lead my own organization, or I just don't want to go at this pace anymore. And then, it's a little Darwin. They'll opt out. They move away from the organization. And I can't remember the last time we had to fire somebody because of a lack of performance, because we hired the right person, we put the right systems in place, we give them the resources and the freedom to achieve success. And then we create the accountability benchmarks that they know what success looks like, and they're always racing towards that success.
And I think that's critically important. We talked about getting the right individuals on the bus, and part of that is really having the direction set and the guardrails set for that, so that individuals, once they get on the bus, can truly run to their full potential, and that everybody can run in the same direction, so to speak. And so having that scoreboard and having those regular check-ins at the scoreboard on where did we start out this year going, and how can we make sure that we all are still going in that direction, and what do we need to hire if we do need to hire in order to get there. And there are times where one area trumps another area because you have to do that before you can get to the next step. And having that team there in front of that scoreboard to see why those decisions are being made is so transparent. And I also think it helps to get the right individuals in place, so it doesn't end up being one division over another or one person's goals over another. It ends up truly being a team winning together, and finding the right individuals to win together becomes that much more easy for the team. So I know today we wanted to talk through high performance teams. We really wanted to drive home vetting the candidates well as you're growing your team, and having high expectations in terms of goals that are transparent so that the team knows where they're going. And those are kind of the foundation points of building a high performance team. But join us for the next episode, because we're going to launch a little deeper into how do you actually measure your own high performance team. So we talked about how to build it today. Now we're going to talk about how to measure it and to maintain it through measuring it. So join us for next week. Ron, did you have anything else to add this week before we launch into next week's, which is building and maintaining?
High performance teams start at the top. You can't do it overnight, but you have to make a commitment to do it. And every leader I've ever met said the thing they least like about their job is letting people go. So if by building high performance teams, you are minimizing the worst part of your job and you're maximizing the best part, it is a win-win.
All right. So onward to next week, where we launch into best places to work and how to measure your high performance team.
Thanks for joining us. We hope today's conversation inspired you to keep moving forward on your leadership journey. To connect with Ron, you can tweet him at Ron Kitchens or send him a message via ronkitchens.com. If you are listening via iTunes, please leave a review. It really helps us connect to you, grow our impact, and keep moving always forward.